Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone. This is Jim McGrew, Chief Client Services Officer at Ogletree Deacons. Thanks for joining us for our latest Ogletree Deacons Podcast. In this episode, we'll examine new staffing apps that match workers with jobs in the same way that popular ride-sharing apps match passengers with drivers. While these apps may seem to simplify the staffing process, there are numerous legal and practical considerations that should be considered. Our speakers today are Jennifer Colvin in our Chicago office and Kevin Swetch in our Tampa, Florida office. Jennifer, I'll turn things over to you to get us started.
Thanks, Jim. As Jim mentioned, I'm Jennifer, and I'm joined today by my colleague Kevin, and we'll be discussing staffing through the use of mobile platforms. Kevin, let me just start with the rise of the gig economy. For those of you not familiar with the term gig economy, it is characterized by independent workers performing temporary, flexible jobs. Most people think of ride-sharing applications and delivery driver applications when they think about the gig economy, but it really can be so much more than that. A 2016 study by McKinsey Global Institute found that there are between 54 to 68 million independent workers currently in the United States. But this workforce could grow between 30 to 50% in the coming years. And this would result in 76 to 129 million individuals performing gig economy work. It's an awful lot of people. So Kevin, let me ask you this. How has this rapid rise in gig work affected the staffing industry?
Thank you, Jennifer. This question first came to me from a client that brought to my attention some of these applications that have names like Tiller and ShiftGig, and was asking whether or not they were something that should be looked into as a temporary staffing resource. And I really got into that and did some studying and looked into it further, and learned that some of these new applications really work via smartphone and use algorithms to try to match people with positions. And they offer or suggest that this is an alternative approach to or an on-demand type approach, as you mentioned, similar to ride-sharing type applications. But the employment relationship, of course, is a lot more complex than getting a ride to the airport or out to dinner or home for the evening on a Friday night. Taking a look at these temporary staffing options through these app-based approaches, they're kind of the new approach, but the traditional temporary staffing options for employers have involved going to outside staffing agencies or PEO, professional employee organizations. They're providing temporary employees under some type of a negotiated staffing agreement or staffing arrangement. These businesses are highly regulated typically. They operate under state statutory and regulatory schemes. And, they are often considered or admit to being the co-employer or joint employer of the employees along with the employer clients that they're serving.
So, Kevin, what really are some of the things that we need to be considering when we're using these apps? Are those considerations really any different than what we'd be considering if we're using the traditional model?
The answer to that question is, I think, in a broad sense, employers should look at every staffing option, that they're following, particularly temporary staffing options, and they should closely assess those options, where they're resourcing, getting resources and getting services from, and how it meets their business needs, and also legal compliance. The new gig economy options, I think, present some alternatives, and they may emerge and they may evolve further as time goes on. But I would suggest that the same considerations apply regardless of the type of temporary service provider. For example, the big issue that pervades this area is the independent contractor versus employee question. This question really always looms, and a lot of these app-based staffing suppliers really suggest that they're delivering a W-9 or an type person to you, or an independent contractor type person to you. And then what happens is once they get there, then the relationship that you have with that person is going to control, how to characterize it. And even if both parties to the relationship agree that it's a an independent contractor relationship. That may not stand up if it's later challenged, and oftentimes it is.
Yeah, sure. And for what we know right now, we haven't seen any sort of claims or suits like that, but it sounds like something that would be on the horizon.
That's exactly right. And I think, again, these same issues would come up. You know, they're not necessarily targeted or directed at the gig economy type providers. They would really apply in any temporary staffing situation. And if you guess wrong, you know, it has serious consequences because you're really misclassifying people. And then a host of other, you know, sort of cascading issues really come from that if you have the initial guess or the initial classification decision going wrong.
Yeah, sure. And to that point, what about things like, you know, withholdings and medical coverage and things like that, that, you know, you wouldn't normally having to be providing to an independent contractor?
Well, and exactly. And that's supposedly one of the benefits of using that type of service, as it's quick, it's almost on demand and instantaneous. There are considerations, particularly if it's classified, you know, federal requirements for withholding on FICA, Medicare, and federal taxes are pretty tough. SUTA and FUTA, which are the state and federal unemployment tax funds that are contributed to, that's usually based on a percentage of payroll. It's how that tax is calculated. So a lot of these tax and withholding issues, somebody has to be doing it. And if the person is misclassified, then there's a whole bunch of errors going on with respect to withholding and submitting the payments. And that can have serious consequences to the employer and in many instances to individual managers or individual responsible managers. You know, so who's doing that? If you're staffing with an algorithm and the match is with an algorithm, who's making sure that those classifications are correct? Who's making sure that the withholdings are taking place? And under the traditional model, you know, that's typically handled by the either a payroll vendor or the staffing company or the professional employee organization may provide those services as well.
What about things like workers' compensation? I mean, here in Illinois, you know, a traditional model staffing agency would be providing workers' compensation insurance to the people that it's matching with, you know, the end user or the client company. Do we know how these apps are treating issues like that?
Yes. You know, some of my research suggests that some of these app-based temporary staffing models really allow or suggest that they do provide workers' compensation coverage, which answers one of the big questions here and one of the big issues. Even then, you still have to go further. You know, state laws vary, but most states have very strict requirements that you must provide workers' compensation coverage. In Florida, where I practice, the state statute has a potential criminal liability for failure to provide workers' comp coverage. So no matter where you get your temporary employees from, you need to verify coverage. In Florida, there's a state website that you can access that will provide current information as to verifying workers' compensation coverage. And that should always be done, and it should be done annually. If workers' comp is provided, however, and you know, through the net-based temporary staffing agency or through a more traditional model, then that's an admission that that person is an employee, because only employees are typically provided with workers' compensation coverage under the law, and independent contractors are typically not covered under those laws. If you're going down that path and you get the coverage provided through workers' comp, then you've added facts that would suggest that this is an employment relationship, not an independent contractor relationship. And so that's something that needs to be considered. But again, doing that is something that's required under state law, so you better make sure typically that it's done one way or the other.
What else do we need to be thinking about along those same lines?
Well, there's really, you know, as I began to put together this blog presentation today, and, you know, there's a lot of governmental regulatory type issues that come into play here. For example, you know, temporary employees, if they're working for a day, a week, or a month, they need to have their time recorded properly if they are non-exempt under Fair Labor Standards Act or state law, and either the employer or some other way needs to be put together so that the time is kept track of, and it's the employer's obligation to do that, not the employee's. Injuries have to be recorded. If some individual assigned on a temporary basis is injured at work, they likely have to be recorded on the OSHA log. They can probably file and certainly could file EEOC charges and other type claims. And some states and localities have special requirements that apply just the temporary workers, and they where they have to have certain notice obligations and certain other minimum standards applied to them.
Yeah, absolutely. Illinois is one of those states where temporary workers need to be provided with notices as far as, you know, where their assignments are, how many hours they're going to be worked, what their guarantees are, all the way down to whether they're getting paid transportation and paid lunches and breaks and things of that nature. So we have a very kind of thorough process here that governs temporary workers in Illinois. And it would be interesting to see, you know, in the future, for me at least, how these mobile platforms are going to deal with those types of issues when, you know, they're really kind of a faceless platform for interaction between the company and the employee and the end user. So those are some interesting things. Can you also touch on, you know, in a traditional staffing agency relationship with a client company, oftentimes the staffing agency is doing background checks and they'll have indemnification agreements with the end user. Can you touch on those issues on what we might need to consider in this kind of future mobile world?
Well, those are very good points, and I will do that. I mean, and it is sort of a brave new world because, like, for example, under the traditional model, which I'm calling it, as you mentioned, you know, one of the things you can have as an employer, and often employers have, is some type of an indemnification agreement and protection, you know, between the employer and the temporary staffing agency or the PEO. And it sort of sorts out, you know, if somebody makes a mistake, who's responsible, under what circumstances. So you may not have those protections in a gig economy type arrangement when it's more informal, possibly, or potentially not even classified as an employment relationship. So those are considerations. If there's also on background checking, you know, many employers have a requirement to do background checking as part of contracts or as part of their policies. And so the question becomes, who does the background check on these people? Are they in jobs that require a background check? Has that been done? Is this compliant with Fair Credit Reporting Act and things of that nature? So those are all other considerations. And again, these would apply, you know, regardless of the type of temporary staffing. Drug-free workplace policy comes up. Are they subjected to the drug-free workplace policy? Do you have pre-employment policies? Do these people have to go through the pre-employment testing if they show up and they're working right next to an employee who had to go through that testing? So those are some of the other considerations. But there's really a host of them, and almost too many to list. You can think of a variety of governmental NLRB charges, whistleblowing, things of that nature. There's a lot of different laws that may apply to these individuals and need to be thought about depending on the context. And if you're not using the more traditional model, you're using a newer model or models that are evolving, then you need to make sure these boxes are checked as well, because the courts won't be forgiving of you if you don't get it right.
I think the other thing that comes to mind is it's no secret that we're living in a Me Too era. So how does anti-harassment and discrimination policies, how are those affected in this type of a working relationship?
Well, that's, I think, another strong consideration because, you know, as you're aware, Jennifer, many jurisdictions require harassment training, require proof of it. And many employers have routinely been doing harassment training of this nature, anti-harassment training, for quite some time now, even before these legal requirements surfaced. And so you have to also answer these questions. You know, for example, a temporary employee is someone who is subjected to your policies on harassment, against prohibiting harassment, prohibiting discrimination. You need to make sure they understand them. Who do they complain to if they have a problem? Who investigates their conduct if their conduct becomes an issue? So those are very important issues that are addressed in the temporary staffing context. In the traditional model, typically the staffing company or the PEO will provide the handbook or the policy, or they'll have a combination of the two between the employer and the staffing agency or PEO company. So the point, I guess, is that in the traditional model, these issues are usually covered and covered well, and someone is responsible and they get done. And the question is that going to happen with more of the gig economy on demand type of relationship? If someone shows up 3 hours from now, have they checked all those boxes before they go to work? That's a big question that remains unanswered in some of these cases.
I think one of the other things that is kind of hanging out there is this idea of confidential information and trade secrets that oftentimes are, you know, covered by a relationship between a staffing agency and an end user. How are those things affected if we've got these mobile-based apps where that relationship maybe is a little more tenuous?
Well, you know, that's a very good question, and one that raises some issues, you know, in terms of protection as well, because, you know, unscrupulous competitors could potentially have employees come into your organization to get information, or unscrupulous temporary employees could take trade secrets or confidential information, even if they're working for an employer for just one day. You know, so in any circumstance where an employer has temporary employees in the workplace and they have access to the employer's trade secrets, confidential information, other proprietary business information, that employee should absolutely sign the employer's written agreement, prohibiting use and disclosure of trade secrets and other type of proprietary information. If without that, you're not going to be able to enforce the agreement or recover anything if stuff is taken and trade secrets are taken. And plus, if you're an employer that complies with the Federal Defend Trade Secrets Act, for example, and you've done the necessary disclosures so that you can litigate trade secret cases in federal court, you may not be able to do that if you don't have an agreement signed with these people. And lack of that agreement is really going to prevent you from fully enforcing your rights to protect trade secrets. And then also it could be used against you in another case, because one of the things employers are required to do in these cases is show that they've made reasonable efforts to protect their trade secrets. And if you have a class of employees coming to work for you that aren't signing trade secret protection agreements, then you may have a gap of, and it may show lax coverage, and it may affect future cases or current cases. So what I found in general as looking at these issues is that there's really almost anything employment related that you have to deal with every day as an employer, you have to think about and address in this context if you're bringing in a temporary employee, no matter what source or method you're using to do that.
Well, there certainly are a lot of considerations, as you mentioned, for both this new platform as well as the traditional model. And I think it's a really interesting topic. And I thank you for joining me today to discuss it. And I thank all of you for listening to the Ogletree Deacons podcast. And we look forward to having you join us for other podcasts in the future. And we wish you a great day. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jennifer and Kevin, for that informative podcast on staffing apps. That's a topic I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more about in the future. I hope you'll join us for our next Ogletree Deacons podcast. In the meantime, this is Jim McGrew wishing you much success in your workplace. So long.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.